The Holy Gospel is recorded in Matthew, the fifth chapter, and if you want to look in the Pew Bibles, it's page 785, Matthew 5, 1 to 12, or your Bible apps, Matthew 5, 1 to 12. When Jesus saw the crowds, the ones he had just been busy healing in the previous story, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him, and then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart. They will see God. And blessed are the peacemakers. They will be called children of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of the heavens. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who came before you." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Christ. Please be seated. Well, Texans fans, maybe New Orleans fans too, and Packers fans, Vikings fans, whoever you are, here we are, Super Bowl Sunday, and isn't it nice we don't have to be obsessed about the game today? I mean, isn't that nice? You know, unlike those Seahawks and Broncos fans, you know, doesn't that feel righteous? Nah, you know, I don't have to worry about it. We can just sit back and enjoy the game, the commercials, you know, and the halftime show. But we are obsessing about something today. Our dads and our youth are getting our attention to obsess about hunger in Montgomery County today. And so this stuff up here is part of that, the food up here, but also, you know, you'll hear a lot of music in the hallway when we're done here, and then also there's a lot happening in the fellowship hall that we want you to join in on, and you can buy tickets if you want, or just use your cash, buy tickets by check, cash, or credit card from Nancy Williamson to vote for your favorite foods in the tasting area there for each team to see which team wins the tasting. Well, any rate, last week I said that the Gospel of Matthew, our main gospel for this year, you know, every 3 years we have a main set of lessons that we repeat, and this year, mostly the Gospel of Matthew, and it's an apprenticeship manual written for the Jewish Christians, kind of like their catechism, or maybe like an apprenticeship manual, you know, because that is what the early disciples were. They were apprentices of Jesus. And what were they doing? To what? Well, repeat after me as we did last week. As a disciple, I am learning to live my life the way Jesus would live my life if I were Jesus. Great, thank you. The disciples called to this point, Jesus now has taken them after he's done a bunch of healing up on this mountaintop, and he begins to teach these apprentices lesson number one for apprentices, right? That's the Beatitudes. Right here in the Sermon on the Mount, the most famous sermon of Jesus. There's five of them, by the way, in this Gospel of Matthew. But right at the beginning, it's these awesome things called the Beatitudes. Now, how many of you had to memorize those as a kid? Well, some of you did. All right, good. I did too. They're great to remember. They're right up there on the charts, the popular charts with the Ten Commandments and the Lord's Prayer and the 23rd Psalm and John 3:16. Really good stuff to memorize. The key issue in this apprenticeship lesson that some of you memorized is this: who is truly blessed? Or maybe it's like, what are the conditions under which you can be blessed? Or the circumstances that are necessary for you to be blessed. And you know how hard it is for us to grasp this apprenticeship lesson, because the world teaches us something entirely differently. And in fact, the Jewish community in the time of Jesus taught something entirely differently than what Jesus is going to teach us today. Basically, you know, what the world teaches you is what? You're blessed if you have all the good things of life. Right? I'm certainly grateful for my life, for my house, my family, my wife. I'm grateful for living in this beautiful place, you know, biking and jogging trails everywhere I look, trees, gorgeous trees. It's so beautiful around here. I get to go to the Mitchell Pavilion. I can go for free as a volunteer if I want. I can do all sorts of stuff that cost me nothing. You know, isn't that blessed? I think it is. The world stops there, and then it says, and the Jewish community in Jesus' time would say the same thing. No. If you're experiencing all that blessing, it must be because you've been a good person, or you've worked so hard at it, you've climbed that ladder of success until you've gotten up to the top where the red ripe apples are, you've been able to pluck the fruits of your labors, and now you're enjoying them because you deserve them, right? That's what the world says. Or, if you're a little bit more religious, you've been faithful to God and now God's rewarding you, right? Either way, the world and some religious communities have a very conditional way of understanding blessing, beatitude. That it's all up to us, right? And that maybe I can manipulate God into giving me what I want if I'm nice, if I'm moral, if I work hard, if I'm fairly generous with my stuff, then God should bless me, right? Right. Well, there's another way that churches have read these Beatitudes that's a little more subtle way of earning our blessings. So it's still the same thing. And I thought about them this way for years, most of my life, really. It might seem to us, it did to me, that Jesus was teaching his apprentices that in order to be blessed, you have to be on the margins of society out here, right? Poor, in the Gospel of Luke, he says, blessed are you poor, literally, or at least poor in spirit, or you have to be meek, which means you don't demand anything or don't ask for anything, maybe, or you have to be grieving of something, some loss. So if you're not mourning or grieving, if you don't have something to cry about, come up with something so you can be blessed. I mean, right? Crazy, but that's what it is. Or you have to be fighting for peace. Isn't that an interesting phrase? Fighting for peace. I did that for years. I fought for peace. Or obsessed with social justice. Or you have to be at least suffering for Jesus' sake, having people lie about you, revile you because you're following Jesus. So one way or another, get miserable if you want to be blessed. Right? Well, that's what I thought. I really believe this. I did. You know? Here I was. For several years, 10 years, I was serving an inner city church in Milwaukee. And I often felt like old Mother Hubbard who lived in a shoe who had so many children she didn't know what to do. It's exhausting work in the central city. It really is, with all the human needs all the time. And I believed that the more stressed I was, the more I risked my life walking the streets of Milwaukee, the more time I spent helping to structure, and not just doing good deeds, but structuring social justice through our church's ministry so that when we did stuff, it was targeted and made a longer-term difference in people's lives, right? Does that make sense? Of course it does. Well, but we did a lot of that stuff. And was it wrong to serve an inner-city church? Of course not. You know, a lot of good things happened there, and it wasn't all bad. And Emily and I just, we feel so grateful sometimes. We look back, and there's still stuff going on in that neighborhood that started when we were there, and we're grateful for that. But here's the deal. I truly believed the more miserable I was, the more blessed I was. Now, what a great suffering servant of God I was, you know. Oh my, you know, especially compared to those people living out in the suburbs, who escaped the city. You know, I'm still here, right? You know, you see where this goes? Well, I don't believe for one minute anymore, at least, that God wants us to feel miserable in order to get blessed. I don't believe for a minute that Jesus is saying also that there's something particularly sacred about being poor. If you've ever been poor, how sacred did that feel to you? Not. Living from hand to mouth, it's not very sacred feeling. And I don't think that's what Jesus was saying here. So let me tell you what I think Jesus is saying to us about how to be blessed. Well, the first thing, of course, is that the question was a trick question. How do I get blessed? You know, blessing isn't something I get. It's a gift, right? It's not something I earn. I can't get it like some consumer goods I buy at Macy's. Remember Mae West? I've told you this story before, but she was a rather risque actress in the 1920s on the movie screen, and she was just dripping with diamonds for some gala event she went to, and some woman came up to her and said, "Goodness, look at those diamonds." And Mae West said, "Honey, goodness had nothing to do with it." Yeah, there you go. Well, neither my goodness nor my success, neither my passion for justice nor my willingness to sacrifice everything gets me God's blessing. God's blessing has nothing to do with me, except that God wants me to have it. See? And working myself into being miserable is just a big waste of time, let me tell you. Because at the heart of this gospel of Matthew, this textbook for the apprentices of Jesus, is this notion of the kingdom of the heavens, the ouranos, the atmosphere. And it's already flowing, like I said with the kids, abundantly. The divine positive energy of love and mercy is always flowing. And Jesus came into the world to make it known, to reveal it, to make it clear in the flesh, God's abundant blessing for every last human being. So the point Jesus is making, I believe, here, by pointing out people who are suffering and are marginalized in life, those who seem farthest away from God's blessing, notice they're the ones that Jesus was healing and comforting just before he gave the sermon. Those crowds that were following him, they were receiving God's blessing, God's mercy, God's grace. God's goodness are always flowing. That's what Jesus wants to drive home to us. Through his very being, he demonstrates it. The fact of God's care and provision proves there's no human condition that excludes blessedness. If his eye is on the sparrow, as that old song says, his eye is surely on me. And you'll hear that in a couple weeks, right in this Sermon on the Mount here. Well, before I was serving that inner city church in Milwaukee, I was the suburban youth pastor in one of the wealthier suburbs in the Milwaukee area. And I worked with teenagers who I just loved. They were kids who had everything. I mean, for them, poverty was not getting a new car when you turned 16, you know. That's how it was there. Or it was being denied the experience of going to the senior cruise to the Bahamas. You know, that was considered your right for these kids. So the leadership, we decided we needed to give them an experience of something they didn't have, and that was an experience of poverty. As apprentices to Jesus, they needed to see the other side of life a little bit. So we took them to Appalachia. Our kids went there a couple years ago, and here from Lord of Life. We went to a small town in Kentucky, and our groups of kids were assigned to work with three local teenagers from that same community on their work projects, right? So we'd have five of our kids and three of the local kids, teenagers, working together all week as a team. And I have to tell you, I was so grateful and impressed and so proud of my kids because they treated those kids from that town with such respect and dignity. I was so impressed. And, you know, they worked together. There was one in one group that I was assigned to myself. His name was Dwayne, one of the local kids. And it came to the closing worship service, and those of you who've been on mission trips with kids, you know how it is. Everybody's emotional. They're overwhelmed because they've had this immersion experience into a whole different side of life than they've ever experienced. They're stressed, they're exhausted, and grateful, and a bunch of things, and they have strong feelings for what they've just witnessed. So these kids, Dwayne was in that group. They had their three kids in that group with the five. They sat together at worship, and these kids in my group that I was with, they were so moved they wanted to pray, so they stood up and they planned to pray together for the poor people of Appalachia. Well, Dwayne was so furious. He was just ticked. He said, "What? How dare you call me poor? I never thought of myself as poor ever. You know, you tell me I'm poor? I have all this woods to run in and hunt in all the time. I have a whole pen of rabbits at home, and I have a mama and my granddaddy at home who love me. How dare you call me poor? You better save your prayers for somebody who needs them." So much for our do-goodism, huh? Well, and then I was even more impressed when I got home with our kids, because the Sunday after, of course, our youth were reporting to the congregation during the service like we do here, and this guy Michael was in that group, and he started his sharing with this beatitude: "Blessed are the poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And he went on and told his story about how they got affected by working with Dwayne and these kids and this community, and Dwayne's comments to them before they left, and how they had to struggle with that. And here's what he said. He quoted this this thing: "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And then he went on and he said, you know, he shared this whole thing about Dwayne, and then he said something like this: "I thought that was about them. But now I know better. I find out it's us who are the poor in spirit, not Dwayne. We think we have so much we don't need God. And that makes us the poor ones." Got that? This is a 16-year-old kid who gets that. Blew me away. 10 years later, here I am, this inner city pastor, and it's that same Michael who led the drive to have that church in the suburbs be our partner church in the inner city, Milwaukee. Yep. You know what? Those poor in spirit teenagers, theirs is the kingdom of the heavens. And their friends in that Appalachian village, theirs is the kingdom of the heavens as well. Blessed are all of them with God's comfort and their inheritance in Jesus Christ of this kingdom, the fullness of life, the mercy of God. These blessings already ours too, right now, in the midst of our day-to-day living, and the only thing that makes a difference between us and the world is knowing and claiming this blessedness from God. Because it's always flowing. Remember the Christmas hymn? He comes to make his blessings flow. And when it's flowing through us, this kingdom of the heavens energy, this kingdom of Jesus' reign, rule over all creation, it just does bless other people in our lives, you know? It just flows. We can't help it. We apprentices can't help but witness to God's blessing in our lives through our words and certainly our willingness to act on what we know now about blessedness. So how do we get blessed in our lives? By receiving the blessing that's already flowing, that Jesus has brought to light, this epiphany. And it's not just a blessing in spite of your circumstances. Remember that. It's a blessing in the midst of your circumstances. And how do we share that blessing that's become so real to us? By sharing it. And it comes moment to moment, that sharing. It's not a program. Maybe it's just dropping a couple bucks in a bucket at a tailgate party. So there you have it. Jesus' apprenticeship lesson number one, the Beatitudes. And blessed are you.